I'm going to tell you a few stories. All you have to do is listen.
Welcome to another movie podcast, the odd show that protects mutant children in a weird house from strange villains. I'm Oscar, and with me today is
Luke
and
Raphael.
And today, as you can tell maybe by the intro, we will be reviewing three films. The first will be the Tim Burton's latest film, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, starring Ava Green and Samuel Jackson and Asa Butterfield, and that's just going off the top of my head. We'll also be reviewing the latest Western action film that's on in theaters right now, directed by Antoine Fuqua, The Magnificent Seven, which is a remake of a Western film, starring Denzel Washington. And then we'll end our show with a review of the indie hit, the comedy out of New Zealand by Taika Waititi called Hunt for the Wilder People. So it's going to be a fun... It's all three very different movies from each other, honestly. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Check out our website at otherpodcasts.com for all updates, intros, and Twitter feeds, and promotional stuff, and where to donate us, and anything like that. All that stuff is available at that website. The bonus show for this month, if you donate any amount, period, zero, I mean, not zero, but more than one zero, the bonus episode we're going to have for you at the end of this month, if you do so donate, will be The Birth of a Nation. I don't know who will be reviewing that with me, but at least one person, I think I'll string Roth along with that, and maybe Luke if he wants, if he doesn't get out to New York again or some other place he goes to. But that would be cool if you are into, helping us out here. So, but before we get started on our reviews for today, we'll talk a little bit about what we've been watching. And Luke, apparently you have a strange movie that I must know about that I've just, like, never heard about it. So,
Right. Well, it's one of my favorite types of movies.
Okay.
It's a biopic.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
We Are Marshall. It's a 2006 American historical drama biopic. It depicts the aftermath of a 1970 plane crash that killed 37 football players on the Marshall University Thundering Herd football team.
That got dark.
Right.
I did not know anything about this movie.
And then basically they try to get the team back up and running. Matthew McConaughey is like the main, comes in, becomes the coach for the team, and kind of, brings hope and spirit to the town that needs healing.
Wait, after the fact.
Well, duh.
Okay, so it's not like it ends with the team dying that he's marshalling.
No. That's like the very beginning.
This is more. It's more like they come to. Gotcha. He comes to rejuvenate the whole town, I guess.
He's there to all right it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's basically on the high of Friday Night Lights and stuff like that.
Oh, in the same vein. Yeah, is it directed by Peter Berg? I wonder.
Because he makes those kind of
fucking movies all the time.
No, it's directed by somebody called Mek G.
Oh, McG directed that?
Yes.
Okay, I'm definitely not watching that movie.
Why?
I mean, watch his catalog. Just look at his catalog.
He did Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle, and Terminator Salvation.
Yeah. McG, guys.
He's a fellow Midwesterner.
I'll get a side of fries with that. Sorry, it's just his name.
He's
there.
It was on TV. I watched it. It was okay. I will never watch this movie again, and that's about it.
So it was okay. What makes it okay?
The fact that Matthew McConaughey was in there?
Yeah, but this is during the time before the McConaissance.
It felt inspiring, considering this was the day after I was in New York and they had that bombing in Chelsea.
You don't think you mentioned the B in the second B.
So. So I was like, oh, this is a good movie about getting together and,
Okay, I'll leave it there. I mean, I haven't seen it, but based on McG's track record... He's off the rails, that guy, speaking of the track there. Yeah. Right on. That's We Are Marshall, available everywhere, I'm sure.
I'm sure, yeah.
I'm sure it's like a classic staple in American...
Did it make you want to watch a different football movie or anything else?
Like We Are the Titans or Remember the Titans or whatever the fuck it's called.
Remember the Titans or...
I remember them. Or Hoosiers.
Varsity Blues?
That's basketball.
But sports?
I said sports.
Yeah, Rudy?
Senna?
Senna? That's a documentary.
Exactly.
Okay. And he said American. That's not American.
Could have just Rush.
Rush. Even though it's not American. Made by Americans. Whatever the fuck.
All right. Next.
Next is I saw this older movie too. It came out in the same year. I don't have the details on me. But maybe 05, 06. It's a movie called Dead Girl. I'm not even going to ask if you've seen it. It's Dead Girl, one word though. If you look for it, it will just be one word, not separate. Dead Girl is a strange horror movie, and it's very independent too, by the way. So give that a thing in your head before, because it's not really great producedly made. But the movie itself is like half a very uncomfortable, half horror thematics, and it starts off with what could be a very basic scenario, and the horror element is that these boys, these outcasts, and from a high school nearby, they enter this abandoned factory, guys, and what they find in this like weird room under some tunnels or whatever is they find this dead girl that isn't dead and doesn't die when they try killing her, either by accident, that's how they find out, or on purpose. And one of them, you find out really fast which of the two friends is much more devious and menacing and can take advantage of such savagery. And the movie does indeed go into those high school teenage tendencies, and they start like fucking her. It's very strange. They have her bound throughout the whole movie. And the horror, as you can imagine, is that. And also dealing with this supernatural entity that, if unbound, gets crazy violent, but as long as she's bound, she's not. She's very serene, I guess.
Interesting.
Very interesting movie. And I think I'm mentioning it because, A, it's October, horror month, you know. It's a thing. I watched this on, what is that website that I love? Shudder. That's where I saw it. But I'm sure it's available in other places as well. It was available on Netflix for the longest time. I don't know if it's still there. But regardless, it's an interesting film, and definitely not for the faint of heart. And it's not like they show a whole lot or anything. That's very tame as far as what they show. But it's all implied very, very brutally. So, you know, it's one of a kind, I think. And that's what I find good about horror movies sometimes. So that's that girl. And that's it for what we've been watching. Oh, Ralph, you want to mention something real quick? I forgot to go out to you. You don't have one, right? Or you do?
No, I don't have any movies that I've been watching. I've just been binge-watching Luke Cage. So,
what episode?
Last one.
Oh, last one, okay. I'm on the third. Well, the fourth now.
Yeah. It grows on you.
No, I mean, it's good so far.
So do warts. Just throwing it out.
And rashes and crabs and stuff. Okay, that's what we've been watching. Let's get on to our first review of... This is the longest title. Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Now that you say it, doesn't sound that long.
No, I guess not.
We're what's known as peculiar. You met the twins. This is Claire.
Millard, pass the ball.
Millard, you met.
Come on.
And that's you.
Stop cheating, you!
On a quest that jumps to different time spans, Jacob finds a mythical children's home cared for by Miss Peregrine. He also finds out that about the powers of the children and the creatures out to get them. This is the latest film from Tim Burton, the man who brought us such excellent classics. Virtually
it's Johnny
classics
Depp's
now.
Whole career.
For the most part.
Yeah.
For the most part, yeah. Half of his career, easy, goes to Tim Burton. He's made Beetlejuice. He's made Batman, Batman Returns. He's made Sleepy Hollow, which I really like. He made Edward Scissorhands, Ed Wood, which is like probably my favorite of his. Unfortunately, he did do Mars Attacks. No, he didn't do Mars. Did he do Mars Attacks?
I don't think so.
I'm not 100%. I know he did Planet of the Apes. What's one of the, that musical that I really like, Ralph? Sweeney Todd. He did Sweeney Todd. And Big Fish, also a big hit, Big Fish. I'm purposely not naming his last string of films because they're really bad and I really don't remember them.
Tim Burton did Mars Attacks.
He did do Mars Attacks.
Yes,
that's a good movie.
I mean, no, but I like watching it. It must be like We Are Marshall or something. Maybe not, I have no idea. Yeah, so I know he did Alice in Wonderland. I forgot what he did before that or between. I know he did that Dark Shadows movie, which was really bad too. I didn't like it at all. Anyway, regardless, Tim Burton is a legend in Hollywood. So before we get into this review of his latest film, what do we think of the man? Luke, since you've been absent from the last show,
think of who?
Start with you. Tim Burton.
he's weird. He has a fascination with Johnny Depp and making him look much whiter than anyone else in the world.
Those are just things. What do you think about, like?
Oh, he's got a lot of heavy hits under his belt, so I expect a lot from the man at this point.
Even still now?
Yeah, whatever he churns out is going to be just like selling like hotcakes at a local Hot Topic.
Oh, no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Do you still have high expectations from him, even though, I mean, maybe you've liked his last few movies. Have you liked all of them?
Not really.
Have you seen all of them?
I saw Big Eyes. I saw
Oh, God, that was a bad Dark that was Shadows. A really bad movie.
I didn't mind Big Eyes.
I bet you didn't.
I thought that was like his most sane movie.
It was so bland, and it went nowhere thematically to me.
Sweeney Todd was good. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was good. And I didn't see Big Fish.
You didn't see Big Fish?
No, I saw Sleepy Hollow.
Okay, I'm giving Monster you my Big Fish DVD, okay?
I saw Batman Forever, Ed Wood. I saw a good chunk of his.
So you like him? That's what you think. You like him, okay. Ralph, what do you
think? I do think Beetlejuice is overrated, though.
Only because you see a Hot Topic, you have to hate it immediately.
No, before Hot Topic.
Well, I'm sure I believe you. Ralph?
We're talking about who here? Tim Burton.
Timothy Burtoness.
Oh, Timothy Burtoness. Overall, I can say I like a lot of his earlier work for sure. I mean, I'm pretty sure most people do. I haven't seen a lot of his other stuff. I saw Dark Shadows when it came out. I didn't abhor it, you know? I thought it was
You don't have to hate it. It funny, was mediocrely right?
Some of the
just
stuff.
There.
I think what you can expect from Tim Burton is a certain artistic style that he likes to go for. It's obviously more of the dark macabre kind of feeling. Definitely everything has to do with a lot of darkness. Look at Batman and Batman Returns. It feels more like what's it called? We see a lot more stuff in the night than we do in the day, right?
At least
things of those nature.
Most of his films, yeah.
Right, exactly. Most of his films. I can't say that for everything, but there's a certain artistic.
Like Big Fish has a lot of daytime.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. But like I'm saying, there's a certain artistic value that you kind of expect. It's always in the weird genre. There's nothing normal about a movie that he makes. And I'm pretty sure Luke has seen Big Fish.
No, I have not.
I'm pretty sure you have. This is like
pretty sure I have.
It's a really good movie, man.
I've never seen it.
It's also kind of unforgettable. So if he says he doesn't, I kind of believe him. I'm looking for it now, but keep talking. You're done.
I'm done.
Okay. I've always been a big fan of Tim Burton. If I were to name like my top 50 movies, three of his movies would be on the top 50, which is really good. Give or take. You know, I'm not 100% on that. But like, I feel, that's how I feel about the band, right? So, the thing I really, really feel bad or unsympathetic towards Tim Burton's movies lately is that he has not transitioned well into his new age of filmmaking and CGI and stuff like that. And I don't know, I know CG and CGI are two different things, but whatever. Computer shit going on. He does not do well in them. I think that his best movies are like the ones that everyone remembers, Beetlejuice, Batman, all those, right? They are tangible. They are creatively there. Even like Nightmare Before Christmas, which I know that he is and he didn't direct it, but he's a part of it and all that. Like, it's all very tangible stuff, and those are his most memorable stuff. You know, I know that Alice in Wonderland made a jillion dollars when it came out, but it wasn't a good movie, and no one really says that, and no one ever quotes it or remembers it in such a way. It was just a popular property, and Tim Burton, of course. So I feel like he has really gone off the deep end a little bit with his, CG fascination, and so I always walk into his movies warily, you know, with a little bit of carefulness. I definitely don't have the high anticipation as I used to. But that being said, let's get into our actual review of this film, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. It has some recipes for success before I even saw the film, and one is Ava Green for me, of course. You all know how much I love Ava Green. She's really good in almost everything she's in. Even if the movie around her is terrible, she's usually not the most terrible. She's always the best thing, I mean, in the movie.
I'm trying to think of who she is and where I've seen her.
Casino Royale. I don't think you've seen the... Have you seen the Sin City sequel?
Yeah, I didn't care for that one, so I don't...
No, but
I don't
she's
remember
like,
much of it.
But she's like memorable in the movie. And the 300 sequel... And she's also in...
I forget that there's a sequel.
Penny Dreadful, which is a show that I talked about with you guys a lot. And I know you haven't seen it, but she's really good in that movie. In that show, sorry. It's on Netflix now, actually. those are the top properties that I've known her for, but she's been in other things. She's been around. Anyway. Yeah, Ava Green. And what?
She was in this movie called The Dreamers.
Maybe I don't know that movie.
Me and you were trying to find. We tried to find this movie a long time ago because we saw a trailer for it, and we both liked it. I think we were looking for this movie.
Really?
Yes.
We saw a trailer together, and then we were like looking
off
for it,
like,
and we forgot
some,
to look for it.
Some random VHS.
Really?
Yeah.
How? What year?
2003.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, VHS was still around.
It is in your life.
I mean, it must have been the last year or two of VHS, though, yeah. Right? Because that's around the time when they stopped making them.
But, yeah.
All right, sure.
We'll have to definitely look that one up.
I definitely do not remember that. Okay, so, but going down to the actual movie here, latest Tim Burton movie, I really, really, really liked this movie. I did not, I mean, also coming in with, you know, kind of low expectations, but also kind of like some expectations with the cast and the story and all that. I've seen the trailer before. I came out really digging the film, and I came out really digging how more grounded than I thought it would be, considering the subject matter and considering, you know, Tim Burton's latest movies. It was much more grounded than I thought it would be. It made more sense. It had some nice foreshadowing that actually kind of paid off in nice little ways. And even though it does set up for possible other things, and doesn't really set it up that highly, is that if they just make this movie and one and done it, it's still great. I can still enjoy it for that reason. I'm not leaving hanging. I'm leaving wanting more, but not hanging. So I think it came out. I came out the movie well. I was a little surprised, like Sully, Ruff, in our review. I was surprised anyway that Clint Eastwood did another good blockbuster hit for me. So what did you guys think, Luke? What did you think about?
I'm in the same boat. I wasn't sure what to expect. I did like it more than I thought I was gonna. Aside from some, you know, I had some qualms with it. You know, that's a given.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely enjoyable. And I don't know if there's a sequel in it. I hope not.
Well, I know it's based off a children's book. That's why I say I think there's more. That's why I'm saying that. But I'm not 100%. You can fact check me on that.
Seeing as what Tim Burton has produced over the last couple of years, this is definitely one of his better.
All right, Raph, how do you feel about this one?
I overall liked it. I overall felt similar as you guys. I came in not knowing too much about the movie when we went in, but coming out, it definitely felt, the way you put it, more grounded. It definitely felt like there was a really story that he kind of stuck with it, which, I mean, I guess the book, it kind of felt like he kind of followed the book a lot.
Yeah, I'm curious about how the book is.
Right, so am I. But at the same time,
people get it for Leo as an excuse.
The movie did something really interesting for me. I don't know how you guys felt about it. Was towards the end, towards the most of the movie, I forgot that this was a kid's movie. And
several points in the movie, I was like,
forgot,
"Is this a horror movie
this
now?"
Be a kid's movie.
Right, I forgot right. This is a kid's movie until they get to like
this is a
pier.
Hard PG.
And once they get all the way over there, that's when I was like, oh my God, right. That makes sense. That's a kid's movie.
Yeah, it's a PG movie that snuck in a fun flask.
Yeah.
And drank itself into like a horror theme.
Right, exactly. And I was just like, oh, wow, that's really good of this movie to do that.
Right, it's really good. I mean, we found it refreshing, it seems. Right? Luke,
sure.
Did you find that refreshing? Those
yes.
Scenes of some sudden macabre or the death or dark shit? I did too because it's very Tim Burton to do that. I know that he did some of that in the Willy Wonka remake, or is it Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? Sorry, not remake, but sequel, re-sequel, whatever they call it now. He's done it. Yeah, there's always like spurts, but never so adamant as in this movie, as far as his recent stuff, since like early 2000s, I would argue. I mean, Sweeney Todd is his darkest movie of the 2000s for sure. Like, that's all dark. But it's not fooling itself. It's not trying to say, like, oh, we're a fun-loving musical for kids. No. But this one is being portrayed that way. This Miss Peregrine Home for Peculiar Children is being portrayed as a... Obviously, the title itself says a lot to it. As a kid's movie. And from a kid's book. So, clearly, you know, one matches the other. I'm curious how the book is more now, considering all that horror stuff. But Tim Burton really lays it out there. And I almost wanted to look around in the movie theater when we saw it to see what the kids were if they even pay attention, you know.
No, those little shits were running around.
Oh, you're talking about those two little shits? Yeah, I know. I saw those little kids. But I'm saying the other kids that were watching it.
Heaven forbid they walked in front of you.
Twice. No, twice or three times. Twice. Yeah, that kid was really annoying. God. I mean, whatever. He's not going to listen to this. It doesn't matter. Watch him being an avid podcast fan. Anyway.
Age is six.
Maybe. Starting early. Hook him young, right? I would. Anyway. So, yeah. I really dug, especially the eyeball scene. I can't shake that from my head, honestly. The eyeball scene in that scene when I'm gonna have to start remembering these characters' names. When he visits like that guy who's inventing things and he has those dolls fight each other.
Right. That was fucked up.
That was pretty dark.
Enoch, Nucky.
I'm gonna call him Nucky now. How do you guys feel about the dark elevate the movie in some way? For you, or is it just like a nice little adult thing that you liked? What does it mean for you guys? Those elements, those moments.
I started to know how far he was going to take this, and then I was thinking, what rating is this movie?
It's 13, right? PG-13.
I thought it was PG.
PG-13, dude. According to IMDb, anyway. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
Ooh. Ralph.
Then those kids should not have been in the movie theater.
No. I mean, it says PG-13 for intense sequences of fantasy, action, violence, and peril. Peril is definitely a good word for it. Anyway, Ralph?
I don't think... I think it added to the movie overall, the little dark scenes. I didn't find it as adultish as I guess you're putting it.
I guess I'm just saying as a comparison.
Well, I think because... I think they made it darker, and it looks darker because... It should be something scary, like a boogeyman scary kind of thing. That's the way I kind of took it. Because, especially the scenes when they're eating the eyeballs, right? That's the one you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm just saying that one.
Sure, for example.
I mean, Samuel Jackson's, gleefully eating eyeballs.
Right, exactly. But they're like these monsters, right? Who are like, mm-hmm. and it's like a boogeyman kind of feeling. So there's no other way to put it. It's like the sand monster from Beetlejuice, for example. You know?
I see what you mean.
Yeah, so, I mean...
No, yeah, I'm not trying to say it's HBO suddenly.
Right. But, I mean, I get where you're going with it, but I didn't feel there was that much of an adult moment, as I could take it.
Do you think you would have been scared if you were, like, 11?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I would have been, like, frightened overall that I can't...
Or 13. It's PG-13, so let's say 13.
I can't see an invisible monster that wants to get my eyeballs.
I mean, yeah, as a kid with imagination, right?
Right, exactly,
That
yeah.
could be really
sure.
empowering. And
yeah.
I get that.
It'd make for a good D&D campaign.
Right. What I'm asking is that do we think that it elevated? Because for me, it did. It elevated it in the sense of, like, it just gives you this, it gave me anyway, this sense of actual mortal peril as a PG-13
sure.
captioning system.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
Like, it felt like these people could actually die. I mean, they don't. And right. this is, in the end, a Hollywood children's movie.
Right.
But it was enough to get me to convince, like, God damn, one of these kids could die. All of them, like, it's, the peril was there. They could get seriously injured.
Sure.
A sacrifice could happen. Or maybe the main kid could die because he's, like, the protector because of his power. I know we're spoiling a lot of things, but, you know, whatever. You've seen it by now if you're this far in. And, yeah. So, like, I felt like it gave me, like, that tangible Tim Burton awesome feel. Like, oh, my God, these kids could actually be in danger for real. Even though they're in a different time with some boat they resurrected. You know, all
yeah,
this
it's really
stuff.
Interesting, though. It's a really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I really like the, what was her ability? She's like a keeper.
Oh, they named it something. You remember the name, Luke?
I forgot the name of it, but basically, like she, like her as a keeper, she's supposed to.
Yeah, they're like extra powerful, right? Or something
right.
Like
they have the ability to, I guess, loop times or make loops.
Make loops and also like. Defend the children in some other way besides doing the time loop.
Sure, yeah.
I guess.
And then make yourselves into birds, I guess.
I like that because it gives, for kids' film, it gives a lot of, like, wonder to that. It gives a little bit of that, you know, headmaster, if you want to talk about Harry Potter.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, XYZ to any, you know, device for Mother of Fantasy. So.
Right.
And,
Yimbrin or something.
Yim. They pronounce it differently. But yes, that sounds right.
Yimbrin?
Imbrin?
It's spelled Y-M-B-R-Y.
Yeah, no, it's like a strange spelling. We saw it as Spanish subtitles.
Right.
So I kept putting it on there, but I don't remember. how do we feel about the fantastical elements besides the horror stuff then? I guess we're talking about...
It was fantastic.
Was it fantastic?
Pretty
so. Yeah, some of the stuff was really good. I mean, some of the stuff was a little detracting. Like we didn't need to have the camera all the way up there when you're swooping in. But, you know, things make sense overall. Like, I love the difference between the house that is dilapidated to the house that's brand new, which he sees, like, 5 minutes later in the film runtime, I mean. And same thing with the boat. Oh, that ship, really. It's a ship. Or was a ship. Yeah. Still is? Was.
It was a schooner.
No, it wasn't.
It's a joke.
Shoes are wicked smaller. I do like these gifts. I mean, these are mutants. These are the X-Men, essentially. That's what this is. I mean, these are kids with mutant powers, and other mutants are after them, right? I mean, 100. I mean, that's the nutshell of it. And it's interesting how they call them peculiar. I did say that after the movie theater. Like, we just call them mutants. But it's peculiar is better because it fits the tone of the world. It's very fable-like also because the film is, even when it's sticking to the Earth world, Earth side of the world, you know, when it's reality and real people walking around, even that's a little off and a little unrealistic. Like, the whole movie is obviously fiction and unrealistic. It's all portrayed to be, like I said, fantastical. But, like, his father, the whole thing with... this thing with the school, how they outgloriously laughed at him, like overly over the top, like everything was over the top negative for him, and that could be just his POV, and we're just seeing his POV as opposed to what really happened. But the whole movie's played out that way, and even his grandfather, played by the what's his name? I love that actor. I just forget his name. Terrence Stamp. So weird. He's playing. He's in this movie. He does, like, hard-ass movies before. Oh, he's done anyway. Terrence Stamp, even he, like, everyone's acting not themselves. Chris O'Dowd, who plays his father, is not the worst father, but he's not a very good father at all. He's just anything to do to get away from his kid, he will do. And he'll just do the bare minimum.
Anything to get away from responsibility.
From responsibility, right. Like, he goes to the he gets swayed to go to the island... therapeutically speak to help him, only because of that you know they mentioned about the birds, so he can go watch birds and discover something
and write his book
right, and then he finds that guy who's done way more research than he does, and even though that turns out to be a twist. What do you guys think about that, the whole world set this way?
Well, I think the real horror in this is Samuel L. Jackson's having to stay in Florida for 3 weeks.
Florida's no good.
No, it is weird that he feels left out. I actually liked the beginning, where they explain that the dead or the grandfather has what do they call it?
Not dementia.
Dementia. I was going to say dyslexia, but it's not. That's not the word.
Be too good.
Right. Where he has dementia, right, and he's losing it, but he's always been telling these stories, which is kind of like takes you aback. I like that whole thing. I liked a lot of that building world stuff. And it does feel weird that you're on this island with 92 people, I think. It was a whole whopping population of 92 people.
Right, not even, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't even break 3 digits.
Exactly. So it was interesting to see, like, all that. I guess the peculiarness makes him feel... He makes him feel like he's weird, or he's like this... He has to be this loner kid, this weird, different kid the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Made to feel different, and I think it's like pulling on those strings in a lot of movies of this, where they always pick, like, oh, if you feel different from everybody else and you're not the same or whatever, like, you could be going through this crazy thing also, like, kind of like your wild imagination,
right,
is going.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I like that. I like the whole beginning. The world did feel weird. I guess it's specifically where they are in that pre-World War II thing about to happen, or right when the Nazis are about to...
Yeah, what a strange day to choose.
1943, right.
Well,
I think it was.
She didn't have much time.
Right. It was 1943, right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And it makes sense, yeah, for the time, for the bombings and stuff. It was... that felt weird, but it felt weird because it was a super small city island of, like, nobody there.
Right.
You know, and these punk kids who rap and want to be...
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. They're really bad at it.
Right, exactly. I mean, I overall liked it. I liked a lot of the beginning, a lot of the middle. I do have some problems with the movie, and the problems for me are kind of towards the end. And a lot of things I know we talked when we got out of the theater, for example, how just shit would not work.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we're making
the
one
time
of the
travel paradox thing.
Right, there's a lot of interesting things here that we can get into.
Definitely.
And obviously those are mechanics from the book that they're obviously just taking into, and I don't know if they go further into detail than that in the book. I doubt, because it's kind of like those things that you wash over. You know, you're just like, just let it happen. It happens. Let it happen. You know, one of those things. But there's problems in the movie. I know we're just talking a lot of good stuff about the movie.
Right.
So I don't know if you guys want to get into problems or not.
I mean, if anything, I kind of wish the movie was a little dirtier even than it was. I mean, sometimes I felt a little too polished.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that ship looked horrible because it was supposed to be. So it looked extra horrible, maybe. But it didn't feel like they were really stepping in that ship. Like, right. There are differences for sure. And there are movies that do this better. And I'm not saying Tim Burton has obviously nailed this problem, because that's been his problem lately, is that his worlds feel completely uninteresting and just glossy and not really there. It feels like they're in a green screen. And again, most of the time, these characters are also doing the same. Not all the time, because, you know, the inside the house stuff, it looks like it was actually built. They're actually interacting with things. That's why I felt this movie was more grounded, because overall, they spend their time in, you know, either Florida in the beginning and then in the house for the most part. So, it made more sense for me during those parts. But, I wish that movie was even a little more dirtier, a little more lived in, you know, more smudges and shit. Just details, man. The devil's in the details. And then concentrating to make things look glossier or more rendered, you know, precisely, or color balance just right, or vibrant colored or whatever. It kind of loses some of those details that I wish it did have. So, yeah, I mean, that's also an imperfection, I think, of the movie. I don't know how you guys feel. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I get you. Mm-hmm. My big thing with the movie was I kind of wanted to see more of it, this whole universe that he created.
It was a long movie. It was like 2 hours, right?
Right, but I still wanted more, like, because it's a really cool thing. Like, you had all these peculiar kids, but you only see this handful, and you find out there's all of them all over the world, and all this crazy shit's happening. It's like, well, I want to see that.
And you see those birds. Like, don't tell me. Several of them.
Let me see it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, you can't. Like, if the movie devolved into seeing some of the other places.
Sure, exactly.
Unless
the movie is called Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. So right. We're sticking to that home.
Yeah.
And then obviously we finish it with them getting to a new home, right?
Right. And she's not shown to be anything more special than the other caretakers or like a leader to them.
No.
Or anything like that. She's like just like a captain, and this is her platoon she's saving commandeering.
Sure, exactly.
It's very much like that, and like, you go save yourself. You guys are all lost in the jungle in different areas, and you guys communicate every once in a while. Charlie's after them. I'm just confusing a lot of war stuff in one sentence here.
I actually think some problems that I had with the movies, like I said, towards the end, things like the ship being functional, for example.
Right, yeah, we'll talk about that. I mean, yeah, right. It makes no sense. The girl has fire powers. Yeah, the other girl has air power. Doesn't mean this ship runs on that. It won't run with that. It will not rust and shit.
Exactly.
Those propellers spin once and they fall.
Something took that ship down once.
That's why that too. Like, whatever took it down the first time, why is it going to take it down now?
But also, the movie kind of pulls you out of what it is and in this intrigue and this stuff. I think when those monsters, when they set the trap to bring the monsters to the pier, basically, to where the kids are.
Are you talking about when they interact with the humans?
Yeah. Like,
It
took me out of the movie immediately.
Why?
I don't know why. It felt like this is... I immediately left this movie of intrigue and, like this sense of wonderment and a bunch of things. And
you
a little bit darker. And yeah. I walked into a kid's movie. And
are you saying that you left like a movie that's like it could be magically plausible, like Harry Potter, like a world within ours, ours?
No, yes and no. I left where I was in the movie, which was this cool, like kind of like dark thing going on, and the house was really cool when they fight the creature, and all that stuff. And now it just felt really comical kid things that kids would get away with. Like, oh, like, we brought them over and we're going to hit them with cotton candy so we can see them. And, like and stuff like that. And I was just like, oh, okay, right, we are watching a kids movie. I totally forgot.
Oh,
and that's when the movie kicks in for me, and I'm just like, oh yeah, this is a kids movie, not not an actual, like, you know, movie for I guess
an older kids movie,
right? An older kids movie, I guess you could say, right? Like things of that nature. It's like watching Harry Potter Part One or Harry Potter One, and then watching the last Harry Potter. You're like, and then day, like, there's way different tones going on, right?
Yeah, you're
so
right.
This kid matured in the last 7 years,
right? Exactly. So there's that takes me out, and then also how we have our main villain, Samuel Jackson's character. What's his name in the movie? Baron, right? The Baron. He's kind of really intriguing, but then he never takes the kid's eyes for no reason because the kids can't, like, because it's not towards, you know, the kids can't die technically, but you have this fear of this kid's can be taken away from them or can be killed, but it goes away because at the end it kind of like falls apart for me a lot, and that's where the movie kind of falls apart for me at the end.
Yeah, we'll get into it. I know what you're talking about. How did you feel about those points, Luke? Especially the thing interacting with our human world.
So that was. I'm with the same boat. It just took me out. I'm like, wait, shit. Like, oh, yeah, it's a kid's movie, I suppose.
Yeah, I think I looked at my watch to see. I was like, oh, my God, we've almost been at 2 hours now. Like, it was just a quick moment.
It was just weird. It's like, it was too drastic of, like, a switch.
Really? Huh. I guess I didn't see it that way. I mean, now that you say it, it makes sense. I am not saying it's not true. It's totally true. But I guess I didn't feel it in the moment. But now I do. Thanks for that, I guess. No, sorry.
Anytime.
No. You're right, though. It does take you out. It did take me out, too, I guess. But I just didn't really... I mean, it took me out, like, in a fun way. Like, I was into the game. Like, these guys are kids. It's like, it reminds me of a recent-ish movie. It Follows has this ending where they're trying to capture the monster that also you can't see. By doing all these weird trap things, and it doesn't work. It fails miserably because they're kids. Now, that's an adult movie that takes that supernatural scenario, and it clearly fails because they're kids, and they're not really going to figure it out. They're not really going to stop this thing.
Sure.
And they actually, and don't, you know, spoilers for that movie. Doesn't really, it fails for them. But in this movie, it succeeds because it is ultimately a kids movie.
Right.
And I guess I never really divorced that fact from it. You know?
And then you have the big problem of, like, and it's every movie trope, unfortunately, or every type of this type of movie, where the heroes can do no wrong, and the villains are the stupidest things on the face of the planet. Where, like, oh, we're just mindless guys. We'll go follow them, even though it's a trap. And then they get killed.
There's two bad things I want to mention for that.
Right,
too.
And then the Baron never does anything. And he's like, I'm just going to walk away and leave these kids unattended and go take care of the main kid and not really take care of him.
I think what they were trying to show with Samuel Jackson's thing, because when he kept walking past them, like, okay, you're not really going to stop me. Move, shove them over, maybe hit them, but that's it. Like, not actually stopping these kids / killing them. Because at the very least, you could take out an eyeball and eat it yourself. You know you like them.
Yeah.
Like, we know that you like them. We know that's your Hershey's Kisses, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever the fuck. So, like, I get that. And he doesn't do it. And he constantly doesn't do it because it's a kids movie. I get that. But I think what they're trying to show is the level of greed that this particular leader of these bad guys have. He has, that he just wants to get it over with. He just wants to kill those birds / Miss Peregrine.
Yeah, no, and
I think that's what they're trying to... They fail in doing it, but I think that's what they're
and
trying to
do. Sure, I get where you're going, and I saw it too, but at the same time, yeah, it does fail in it, unfortunately. And that's what I'm trying to say, like, that ending kind of... I mean, the very, very end isn't bad, and I like that whole thing.
Okay.
Kind of how it...
I mean, has the time travel back to the pinpoint?
Sure, yeah, I like how it ended. I really like that, actually. And I know there's a message of no closure for Luke at the end, but...
Is there? Oh, because they go off in the sunset again?
Yeah.
On a ship? They hate the water.
They meet and everything like that. And then they're like, oh, we're going to get to a new home. And not really.
I also like how the romance isn't overplayed. It's actually kind of a subplot.
Yeah.
It's not the main thing. It's not the main drive either. Like, this guy finds his purpose in trying to save them. And in doing so, then has a chance to fall in love. Right. Finds a way to get his dick wet. But it's like it's cause and effect. It's not like... one leads, like, it's like because he's in love, he's gonna go. Like,
sure, exactly.
It's not that I'm so glad they didn't do that, and it's sad how these days we're glad that Hollywood doesn't do that all. You know, like we're just so happy to get something slightly different that we'll jump on the chance to marvel at it.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, it's true, but that's what makes me like it. So
yeah,
can't lie about it.
But like I said, I can't take those faults towards the end, because like I said, it is a more children's movie than it is.
Yeah, and I guess,
but it does feel very young adult. Close to the precipice of, like, I guess a darker movie would be.
Yeah. Like I said, some of those images ain't leaving my brain for a while.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the creatures really look creepy,
too. I'm definitely going to watch the movie again.
Yeah, the creatures look creepy.
Yeah, they look like lickers, but, like, with the way their mouth and the head worked. Yeah. Lickers from Resident Evil, or the game, or the movie, I guess. One thing I do want to mention is that there's even some bad editing, unfortunately, during the fight, during the actual circus ring part, when Samuel Jackson, I forgot his name in the movie. He has a cool name in the movie, though. I remember liking it. Oh, Baron. No, yeah, Baron.
Yeah, Baron.
I like that name. He sends out the other two human-looking minions of his, right? To
sure, the other guys that also made it out of the monster.
Right, who clearly are looking to be... Like, it just seems weird that they would follow him in this, like, follow him so, like, blindly. A general. Yeah. It didn't feel like... Like, I feel like they would run away. Or I feel like they would just follow him because he's going to steal all the power for himself. I feel like they wouldn't actually try to do all this stuff. But let's say they do. And there's some really bad ending somewhere in the middle of the fight where they take out the guy who freezes, right? That's his power. And then the girl just, like, is away for, like, a minute. And then pops her head up when they need to pop her head up. And, like, there's some weird editing thing there. They made it seem like she was just hiding for a while. Not attacking when she could have the whole time, and she just popped her head up at the worst time to do it. Like so you're right. There's some bad film work going on there. Anything you want to add to that, Luke, or say? You're just hot.
No, didn't notice.
You could open the door.
I thought you were gonna say no, and then you just shook your head.
Yeah, this is we can't see you.
Yeah,
we as in the royal right. listeners. We. You could open the door if you want. Okay. You're okay. We record this in my hot-ass room because it's the best for recording in
heat
general.
Death of the universe.
We don't have, like, a fucking studio and shit, so we just record in the smallest
heat
space we can.
Death.
Do. I know. We're almost done. Are we?
I think we are. I don't know what else you guys are going to...
No. I haven't mentioned, like, whole sections of this movie yet. Look at your face. Jesus.
I think you just...
Anything you want to mention? Okay, I'm going to skip you because you'll just say no. Even if you do have something, you'll say no. So, Ralph, do you have anything else to
I
talk
do
about
have something.
Okay, tell me.
It's the fucking time flip pair.
Oh, you guys actually want to talk about the time paradox?
Okay, so he goes back to a couple months
before he actually
leaves in Florida.
Uh-huh.
Sees his grandpa when he's still kicking. It's like, oh, hey, Gramps. There's still another version of him doing his daily routine.
Here's the thing is that I think this movie is more fantasy and, like we said many times, children's book or children's movie.
So
that I think
one
does,
iteration of him is going to get his dick
that.
Wet.
It's not a time travel
and
movie.
And the other one's going to be just a little
I'm
kid.
Just saying, it's not a time travel movie, though. I know that we will love
but
to talk about that.
But it is time travel.
But it's not a time travel
he
movie.
He time travels.
But it's not a time travel movie. It uses that to thematically please the audience / the hero.
But
it's
there's
not,
so much.
It's not actually
there's
important.
So many questions.
No, the minutia of the time traveling doesn't make sense. You don't want to piece it together. It's not Primer. It's not set out to do something like Primer.
The guy goes through all of these, like, he's like, yeah, I went to England, I joined the Navy, I did all this.
I'm just saying, you're knocking on the wrong genre door. This is a different genre from
that. I need explanations.
No, you don't.
What if...
Every time travel movie has, like, horrible mistakes, you know that, right?
He
because that's impossible. I don't know why. I thought you were kidding.
Does that mean the since he went back and now his grandpa's not going to die, that the other kid gets
shafted? I think, thematically speaking, the fact that he calls the home every day and then he answers that one time makes up for all the time travel mistakes for me because that part was one of my favorite scenes.
I don't know.
You know, wasn't that would you like that scene?
I'm still too pissed about that.
Really? The scene?
No, there's too much going on with the time travel. There's
oh, my God. Ralph, how did you feel about that one? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, it was a good scene.
So in this time travel loop thing, they're stuck in 1943 every day, sure. Even though they...
And he calls saying that he basically... Or what's his name? The grandfather. Abe, I think his name was Abe.
Abe. Yeah.
And he tells him, like, thank you for all that.
Well, yeah, he tells him, like, I made it. I joined the army, basically.
Right.
Like, I did what I needed
saying
to.
Saying goodbye or hello or
dating. A little bit of both, I guess, right? And this is the last time that they'll ever hear from him, right?
And the last day when Pesperian was taken and Judy Dench just suddenly dies. That was cool how she just dies. I liked it, actually. I'm like, what is this old woman going to do? Anyway, what?
Nothing.
I saw you looking at something.
Just thinking about this time travel paradox.
Oh, my God. Let it go.
I can't.
Jesus.
It bothers you have to let it go.
It must be so difficult to be in your head all the time. It just must be.
So, look. Let's take that scene where he talks to his grandpa, even though his grandpa's, dead, but he talks to him in his earlier life.
But he's not that. He's in the past.
The next iteration of him is not going to get that because the next iteration is not going to go.
It's about the guy having closure from his grandfather. Did you not see this movie? Oh, my God. It's about the kid and not about the old man.
But there's another kid that's a couple months younger than him that will not get that closure now.
37 fires.
Well, because that grandfather never died.
Right.
The present is what
matters. But he doesn't understand of
all. The present. He doesn't understand. What's his name?
Everything.
He doesn't understand
what his grandpa's been through. He doesn't understand.
Maybe his peculiarity is seeing the monsters and time traveling.
No. That's horrible. Die in a fire.
Although he does do both those things. Something that you can't do.
That's it.
A strange peculiarity. Fucking mutant power. A strange mutant power of his, though. Literally. It's also. This is the last thing I swear to God, because this is important, I think, part of the film. And I don't know how much they are integral to the books, is that. This movie talks about fate without saying it. Because
They do. Yeah, you're right.
Because there's some fated things going on with the bomb almost hitting the place, and clearly when the last day it had. I mean, obviously you know that's coming back. Other things are more subtle. But one thing I want to talk about is the powers, how they are not distributed per se, but how they are acquired, or just, you're born with it, I guess. But how this kid has a very specific power that leads him to be the protector. Like the fighter, the guardian of this home, as well as Miss Peregrine's power is to literally care for the children and protect them on a wider scale.
Right, exactly.
Like everyone has these particular things, like they're meant for something. What do you guys feel about the movie being talking about fate and how everything is fated for something?
Well, it's interesting. They've been waiting their whole lives, theoretically like 100 years, for this fate to happen.
Something like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, 1943 and now they're 2016. The guy pulled out a cell phone, right?
Right, he's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Right, she's like, you'll love this selfie. I was like, ugh. But that's interesting.
It's subtle. It's not like a main thing.
Right, you have to think about it. It's,
Right.
It is very subtle. So, but I do see what you're saying. It does a little bit, obviously, very heavy-handed, but what story isn't, right, where everything has to click in line, right, where you luckily have these twins that are Medusas, you luckily have
right,
this.
And then when we came out of the theater, like, why did you do them all the time?
Right, exactly.
It also seems like an extra powerful weapon, like, if they're looking at anything, by all turns of stuff.
Right. Things of that nature. But maybe what we're seeing is, what's the kid's name?
Jake.
Maybe what we're seeing is Jake is going to be the new type of what's it called, keeper for all of the children.
Yeah, I mean,
and instead of the.
And I'm curious about the other lines because, another thing that the movie is very subtle again. I have to really pay attention for it. Not really pay attention, but pay attention enough is where they have that council with Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
And the people, and they have all these other liquor monsters that haven't eaten enough eyeballs to go back to human. Right.
Right.
They're just craving for them. There's a lot of them. How many more are there? How many more are out there looking for?
Well, that's why I wanted.
If you look at the map,
I'm just thinking it's curious.
Yeah. If you look at the map that his grandfather had, there's like a lot of pins everywhere. There was at least 20, 30 plus.
Right.
So we're talking about 30 places.
And it seems like half of these caretakers rebelled.
Those things that the Baron, those caretakers did rebel. And did make themselves evolve into something else.
Yeah, or devolve something.
Or devolve, right. But the natural order thing made people like Jake come out.
It reminds me of Dr. Sleep, the weird vampire soul suckers travelers, the white trash travelers.
Oh, okay.
From that, have you read the book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, how they're like a slightly different off-putting monsters
that are meant to
be anti-us, anti-humans in their capacity. It's like these people were. You create these wonderful mutants, like peculiarity, whatever, and there's going to be an anti-version of that that came from that. And it's interesting how that works. It's almost like nature is trying to, correct itself. Yeah, there's too many of you peculiar people. Let's make some villains
exactly.
Bring you down the numbers a little bit. Yeah, it feels very nature.
It is.
Which is so unlike Tim Burton for me. I know that he does a lot of nature stuff, but he's not a nature type of guy. He's more lovey-dovey
yeah.
and dark stuff. Anyway, that's it. That's for real all I have. Anything else on... Wait, Miss Peregrine's Home for... fuck! For Peculiar Children.
He just can't say peculiar.
Say that
peculiar.
10 times fast.
Okay. No, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children 10 times fast.
Dude,
I said it.
I hate you.
Okay. Anything else?
Fiend.
Ruff?
Yeah, overall, I think I would still say to somebody, go watch it in theaters. I liked it. I liked a lot of the movie. Like I said, does kind of collapse
on me. Bring
your
13-year-old?
Yeah, it does kind of collapse on me.
Or higher.
I would totally love to go watch this with a kid who's maybe just in like that 7th, 8th grade, which is your 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And just see what they, if they like it or not. Because I think a lot of sense of wonder is kind of gone also with where we're in.
That's two good hits from old classic guys that I haven't seen in a while. Eastwood and Tim Burton.
I was going to say Clint Eastwood, right?
Yeah. I mean, where they made a lot of duds lately. Sure. So, yeah, I also recommend it. I agree. I'm going to watch it again probably. Hopefully before the end of the year, but I don't think it'll be available probably until after.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I say probably, but yeah, most likely. It's a big movie, so it'll give its 5 months wait. So that's it for Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. That's it, right? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review the next film, a Western action extravaganza, The Magnificent Seven. So stay with us.
Pretty. I mean, good. Your shooting is good. Do it again. Sight the lowest part of the V, cheek resting against the stock.
I had a father, thank you.
I didn't. Ooh, God. Dang it, I'm good. 6 pounds of pressure, that's all that's required to kill a man. And they say the nightmares never go away.
Officer of the court, Chisholm, bands together 6 gunmen to help a small town from being tortured and robbed by the nefarious Bartholomew Bogue and his army.
If you're not going to say it right, don't say it at all.
Bartholomew Bogue. Yeah, they don't fucking say that way in the movie at all.
Of course not.
What the fuck was that? The Magnificent Seven. This is the remake of...
The other Magnificent Seven
from, I want to say, the 60s or earlier. 50s, maybe. I don't want to say that.
I should know, but I've seen it.
I know it. Which is also a remake from the classic Japanese Akira Kurosawa films, The Seven Samurai. Have you seen those two previous films, Ruff?
I don't think I've seen the original Magnificent Seven.
The American one? No.
No, but I have seen...
The Shiro Mifune again. I have seen the Seven Samurai.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So, how do you feel about that movie? Do you feel like it's the classic, well-deserved?
Seven Samurai.
Yeah,
I think it's a great movie.
Yeah, I think so too. It's pretty amazing.
Actually, yeah.
I saw it last year for the second time.
I mean, I just love the shots, the pan out shots that you're doing of the whole village, all the stuff's going on. Oh, it's great.
That movie has a lot going for it. It's not even that long either. It has a lot going for it.
I can't remember. I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but yeah.
Yeah, we should rewatch that.
We should.
I don't have that Criterion collection, do I? I don't think so.
I don't think you do.
Anyway, Antoine Fuqua.
Fuqua.
His most popular film has always been, Training Day. But he has done... Which I know you've seen, Ralph. He's done...
Training Day? Yeah.
He's did Southpaw, The Equalizer, Olympus Has Fallen, Brooklyn's Finest.
I've seen Olympus Has Fallen.
Shooter. I'm trying to think. Tears of the Sun. I saw that one. Didn't he do... Damn. Okay, I can't find it. It must have been the writer instead of the director. Anyway, so he has done some action movies and clearly has worked with Denzel Washington a couple times here. More than a couple times. Two things here. Luke has not seen this movie.
Yeah.
He slept in for some reason.
Yeah, shit happens. I just remembered I did see Southpaw when I was in New York.
Okay. I was about to say the second thing was that don't, bother Roth. If you're not even in the part of the fucking show. Yeah. If you're going to be part of the show, then say something.
I was. I saw Southpaw.
What did you think of it?
That's what he was telling me.
It's cool.
Yes,
predictable.
Say it on the fucking show,
and
on the air.
And then I told him, I go, obviously it wasn't memorable if you didn't remember.
Hey, I worked a lot, so I don't know.
That means left-handed.
Shut up. Okay. I'm just curious, because I didn't see the movie, but I thought Chris Pratt was the main guy in this movie, the way the trailer
No, he's just
very clearly the first actor we see, which is Denzel Washington.
Okay, see, no, I guess we see the opening.
No,
Denzel is our main, and obviously Chris is the next big ticket on there.
Okay, because he's the second
when
one.
When you said Denzel Washington, and I'm like, he's talking about the original one, or is he talking about this one?
The original, he was like a kid.
I had no idea Denzel Washington was in this movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna go shoot a bad guy. I can't even do it. I can't even keep it straight. You're a strange bird. Denzel Washington stars of a movie that you haven't seen, so why do you even care?
I didn't know he was in it.
Don't watch it. It's a terrible movie. Are you ready for this review?
Okay, let's hit it.
Anyway, what do we think of Fuqua? I mean, Training Day is clearly the most popular movie. You guys like that movie, right? We all like that.
Yeah, I really like Training Day, actually.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. I mean, it swept the Oscars as well, which is interesting.
Fuqua.
Fuqua.
He did The Equalizer, which was...
I did not see that one.
I saw it. Remember? I think we talked about it in our...
on our previous podcast?
On our previous podcast, yeah. I felt that Denzel Washington is this old man in there. He did Shooter, which I didn't hate Shooter, but...
Didn't see that one either. Or did I? I don't remember.
You probably did. It just didn't. And Olympus Has Fallen is Morgan Freeman in it, so it's pretty cool.
That one I haven't seen either.
Morgan Freeman.
Didn't they do another one? London Fell?
London Has Fallen, yeah. I don't think they did that one, though.
Oh, he didn't do that one, but no. It was a sequel made by somebody else.
Sure.
Okay. Anyway, so I feel I'm mixed on the guy. Like, he clearly just does, like, action movies. He tries to be serious sometimes, and it doesn't really work out for him.
Yeah.
Like, Tears for the Sun didn't really work out, and he tries to be more serious in that movie. It's still the same kind of glossy action overall. And from what I could tell, based on the trailers for Equalizer, which, again, it came out last year, his last movie before this one, felt very similarly, and that's why I didn't see it. And as far as I can tell, I'm glad I didn't see it. Now, The Magnificent Seven. I chose this movie because it was kind of a, you know, for the third movie to watch, I couldn't think of many others. And, like, I almost chose a movie that we would end up hating. It was going to be The Blair Witch, but... I mean, I had seen it, so I saved you from that one, Ralph. But I couldn't save you from this one, unfortunately.
No, you could not.
But it's okay. This is a better movie to dislike than the other one, anyway. So clearly, we're coming in as negative. We know how we feel already, Ralph. Mm-hmm. How do you? What do you think of this remake? And what's or let's just name one thing that you hated about it, and we'll start from that point.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot to hate, so let's go with what we liked.
Okay. Cool.
So, what did I like? I actually liked the introduction to our hero or our main guy, what's called, and I guess the whole problem with the town overall. I didn't hate that part. It was interesting.
Yeah, I had some hope.
Yeah, exactly. I had some hope also. what's it called? So I didn't, but a lot of other characters just get kind of crammed in there to like introductions, and that kind of just takes you out of it also. So that's really the most helpful thing. There is some interesting action going on also. Lots of more explosions. I love the machine gun part in the movie, specifically where just kind of rails the whole town.
The Gatling gun?
Yeah, it was such a cool scene. Just like that first shot through where it just like kind of cuts through everything that they had planned for the whole thing.
I wish I liked that scene. I did not like it, but I'll get to that point.
Sure. And, well... I can see why, but I liked it in general, what it did. But overall, yeah, there's everything else to hate. So...
Well, okay, let's talk about more likes. And I want to say that I also did like the Denzel Washington's intro. Not really Chris Pratt's. Like, I get what they were trying to do. I don't know, like, he's the first of the seven or whatever, or the six extra that he gets.
Yeah.
I get it. He's the first, and he's clearly supposed to be the comic relief. That doesn't work. I never laughed with him once. But that whole beginning thing was very awkward. I didn't really like his intro. I did not understand what Chris Pratt was doing in this movie. And I can kind of say that with every other character, almost like half the other characters, at least easy. And I don't mean just the gunslingers. I mean the main bad guys, wicked over the top. He belongs almost in another movie, or maybe he does belong in this movie, and everyone else should be more over the top. I don't know yet. But played by Peter Skarsgård, I want to say his name is. Sars, I always forget. Anyway, what do you look? You like, yeah. I know it's Peter. He was from An Education, a great movie. Yeah. Yeah, was it 2009? No one else can hear you. You have to pick up a mic. Okay. All right then. I did enjoy some of the other stuff, but like some of the stuff made no sense to what people said. Like, Ethan Hawke was not from New Orleans in that movie, or Creole, or whatever the fuck they were trying to say he was. I love saying his last name. I forgot his last name, but I remember Robineau or something like that. I had like one of those N-A-U-X names to it. Anyway, I like some stuff. I didn't like some of the stuff. Some of the stuff I also did like. That's it.
I like the training scene also, where it's sort of a comic relief thing, where what's his name, our only Asian in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's like showing them how to kill people with a knife, and he's like, it's easy, and it's easy, and he's just slashing away, and they're looking at him like, dude, I can't do that.
Yeah, that's true. That's funny. You're right. That was kind of funny. It has its moments. Do you think this movie's comedy works? Like, I know it doesn't work all the time for you. I know that, and mm-hmm. and you obviously know it doesn't work for all the time for me either. But did it work for you more than half the time or less than that?
I would say close to half, but I would say on the lesser.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, I wish I really. I'm trying to find something I liked about this movie. I mean, I did like the cast overall. I think they would be cool. Byung-hun Lee is awesome, and he's been in some great South Korean movies I've seen him in.
Yeah, he has.
His change into coming to American film, it's like his third or fourth, hasn't been terrible, but it hasn't
but they've
really
been
good either.
Big ticket movies. You know, they've been like big blockbuster, big other really big actors in this movie also.
Mm-hmm.
They're at least classifying him into this, you know, plethora of other big name actors. We got Denzel Washington, who's, I mean, just gigantic, right? And Chris Pratt, who's trying to make it really big now also. So, and he's had, like, really good luck with Marvel movies. And other things, of course.
Jurassic World.
Jurassic, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, they're not, at least they're not throwing him into, like, a shitty movie on purpose, you know? It doesn't feel that way anyway.
I just wish I knew what this movie was trying to do. Like, I'm trying to think why. Okay, I really kind of stopped asking why make a remake anymore because clearly, just money. Money is the only reason to ever make a remake. Because I feel like if you're going to remake something or sequelize something, you have to have a reason. You have to have some reason, hopefully within the story or thematically or something, that makes you passionately about making another movie with these characters or making a remake with the same characters.
Right. Why do you think the story needs to be told again?
Why possibly else could you want to remake a movie? Especially when you have to live up to the clearly much better, awesome, classic American film and Japanese original. Like, how could you compete with that? Why even try? It's like you're setting up yourself to fail.
Yeah.
And this movie, whatever it was trying to do, and I still don't know what it was trying to do, again, besides money, is so bad that it just fails on every front. Like, if you start talking about the race angle, because oddly enough, is that this movie only has really, and it's on its Magnificent Seven scale, it has two white guys and then five, like, non-whites, which is interesting. You know, Denzel Washington is black, obviously. The Asian guy, sorry, I'm going to butcher all these. The Native American. Oh, no, wait.
Three white guys.
I forgot about Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
Who has, like, the weirdest accent. He's like a bear. I think he was the most fun to watch, but he was weird. Who else? And the Mexican, of course, who wasn't played by a Mexican, by the way, but he's portrayed to be a Mexican, I think. So, whatever. And they had, and it's funny how they survived and the three white guys died. Which is another funny thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, it has that going for it, but it doesn't do anything for it. Like in the beginning, when you see Denzel Washington approach, he does the murdering in the bar, and he has to present himself like, oh, I'm the officer of the court or whatever. Like, yeah, the looks that he gets, very fitting to the times, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they would have been even harsher, honestly, because he's a black man in the Western time. You're fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
They would have been all over his ass before they checked his card or whatever. It's not like Django Unchained, right? We just present, you know, whatever. And they do something similar with the Native American, I think, and the Mexican. They get some weird looks when they enter the village or the town they're trying to save. But that's it. They don't ever address any more than that. I'm like, okay, that's fine. You don't have to do that. But then you go into something else. Let's talk about the action itself. This movie's an action movie, clearly. It's trying to be, let's say, Tombstone. Much better movie, by the way. Tombstone. Watch it again, guys. Totally holds up. The action isn't very inspiring or not that great, even. And a lot of it's very point and shoot, and, you know, to be blunt or, you know, pardon the pun or whatever. Like, let's say they got in a gun scene, and there's a lot of reasons why I don't like that scene. And one is because the first time they show it, it's like the longest clip or three clips I've ever heard in my life. The longest fucking scene ever. And it cuts the town to ribbons. And you're right, it is cool to see that.
Yeah, that's
but
what
I think,
meant.
Yeah, it's cool to see, but it never gets beyond that for me. Because, like, once you start piecing it together, how, like, what... Just skip town. What's the point of being in this town? What's the point of having this, like, as a bad guy? What is the point of having this town around if you're going to destroy it and if you don't care enough to destroy it anyway? And B, if these villagers want to just move out, if this is what's going to happen to their town, it makes everything pointless to why they're fighting to begin with. That's one. And then B, or two, the next time you see the Gatling gun in action, it's like 2 to 5 seconds. And it just goes... Nothing. It doesn't actually damage anything extra more. Nothing happens from that second time.
Well,
I think Ethan Hawke dies and then the other guy.
Well, so. Yeah. Well, yeah. What you don't see is that it hit all of its regular bullet holes.
Oh, yeah. It's like a perfectly timed...
Sure, exactly.
Uh-huh. Wow. Can you imagine? That'd be... Okay,
next
that's kind of cool. I wish that movie did that. That would have been like, whoa. That's the one curveball that I liked.
Exactly.
All right, I agree with that. I go with that. And that whole ridiculous... But what was Chris Pratt going to do? He managed to get the dynamite and blow it up for sure, but, like, everything went wrong. He could have shot him 50,000 times before he got there. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to make it serious and impactful. Like, who gives a card trick? You're a drunk. We don't give a shit about you.
Yeah.
You know, that's me almost yelling at the movie.
Exactly.
Theater.
There's no reason why we care for... Any character, except for technically Denzel, they tried the hardest.
Chisholm. Oh my god, they tried so hard, and they just threw in that plot about him wanting revenge. The whole thing with his mother.
Well, they talk about it, they bring it up, but they only like hint at it once.
Yeah, and then he actually brings it up when he's monologuing to the bad guy.
Right, exactly.
Which is strange, a good guy monologuing to the bad guy. Because he has to, because there's no exposition before that time. Like, oh, Denzel Washington's whole family.
Right.
But also, the problem with that, on top of being stupid and horrible writing, is that, which is really bad writing. Guys, don't do that ever. The really bad thing is that it nullifies the whole heroic thing. He's not a hero anymore. He's doing this for vengeance. He's not even doing it to save the town. Fuck the town. The town's not, it's full of bullet holes anyway. Why even save it to be, like, it feels like it diminishes... His whole banding together of the people and saving this town and giving a shit about anyone but his own revenge.
I totally was making fun of this movie when I was watching it with a friend. And when the first time they walk into town and they take out all those the henchmen.
Oh, yeah, the right? ones are in there.
And they go into the bar afterwards or whatever, right? And I was like, yeah, I'll help you clean up the town, but I'll help you get what's it called? Make the trash, right?
Yeah.
But I won't help you take out the trash. Like, I kill the people, but I don't pick up the dead bodies. That's your problem.
Jesus,
like there was dead bodies everywhere.
Yeah.
So it was just like, man, it was just a mess everywhere.
Yeah, it's very, very crass the way it's depicting all these things, and it doesn't even have the time to give a shit. It's like it doesn't even know it's doing problems. It feels like this movie is doing like it doesn't even know the horrible, glaring problems thematically, structurally. Fucking just hero, just basic hero villain stuff that it doesn't even know that there's problems there to give a shit about. Like, it's so bad that it doesn't even know it has problems. That's how I feel about this movie, watching it. And the more I thought about it after the fact, like a day later to a week later, I'm like, man, this movie really sucks. And I really wish it had something redeeming. I wish there was some great gunfight scenes. And don't get me wrong, when they entered the town the first time and then when they went to the mine to rescue the workers, that was just really a bystander thing. That was kind of cool. I liked some of that. But even a Western, which could like rely on beautiful scenery of the mountains and the valleys, doesn't
Nothing.
Do any of that. None
Nothing.
Of that. Like, that's staple shit.
Yeah.
That's staple shit.
Mm-hmm.
Get a beautiful camera, get a nice angle. That's it. Not even as a good transition between one scene to another. Nothing. Oof. This movie suffers so much.
Yeah, I don't think they knew what they wanted to do as far as their main focus. And besides action... And that's it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. As too many hands in the pot, maybe. It just felt...
It's funny because one of the writers is the guy who wrote and directed True Detective. Well, not directed, but the creator of True Detective. So that's interesting because he clearly wrote some awesome TV there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it has so much bad stuff going on everywhere else. Like I said, the lack of plot. lack of introduction to the heroes. That whole scene where with the Indian and
the other Indian,
and it's like you're being tracked. And you're like, okay, and then you're like, oh, it's an Indian, and he's like, no, luckily I speak his language, and I'm like, oh my god, like,
yeah,
what the fuck, like out of all the tribes, you speak this language, like,
yeah,
are you kidding me?
And also, it's like they don't even have to look for these gunmen. It's like they just happen to fall upon them. They couldn't trip over more gunmen if they wanted to.
Yeah, that's true.
It was very much like you know, it reminded me of X-Men Apocalypse. The first four mutants he finds, that's who his team is.
Yeah.
Like the first five people with guns on their hips, that's his team.
Right.
And they all say yes for God knows why. And also, well, not so much God knows why, because this village, unlike the other movies, they actually have the money to pay. They have gold coins and shit, and they clearly are feeding them and drink and whatever. Like, it's funny how it never goes beyond that one point of her, you know, meeting Denzel Washington, offering the money, and he offers in turn to the gunmen so they can, you know, join him. Like, it's very clear transaction. In the old movies, that's like a point. Like the fact that these, especially in Seven Samurai, they neglect the thing. They're just like, well, we're just doing it for rice. We're doing it for the farmers. We're doing it for heroism. We're doing it for noble reasons. They have integrity. They have honor. They do it for other reasons that makes the movie much more important and awesome, and to why each of these characters have their own particular little reasons behind them. And this is for money. They're done. Okay. Where's the receipt? You know,
right.
Oh, the invoice. It's just terrible. That's a lot of loose stuff. Doing.
Yeah. I just don't know where to go.
We don't have to go that far. I mean, it's going to be a short review, but sure. We clearly didn't like this movie.
No, we didn't. I mean, I liked making fun of it while I was watching it.
Totally. If you want, yeah, this is a good make fun of movie for sure. If you want to do that, I recommend it for that. Anything else you want to mention? Something specific?
I really don't know what they were trying to do with Chris Pratt's character. They make him into this supposed hero at the end.
I mean, he's clearly trying to be the Mifune character, where he's like the buffoon, the young, you know, guy who's trying to prove himself. But he's not. He's also a gunslinger, old school, where he can fight. So he's both?
Yeah.
What the fuck is he? Is he a fuck up or not? Is he a drunk or not? Because Mifune was also the drunk, I think.
That's what I'm trying to say. I don't know what they're trying to do with it.
I don't know either, man. I want to be in that writer's room. Or I want to be in the producers' meetings of this stuff. Like, what is the Mister? Yeah, Fuqua. What is the meaning behind my character? Well, you have money, and I think that's it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just want to know what they were talking about or filming it. I don't know. Maybe they're all blind. I don't know. That's all I got. Obviously. There's one thing I did. I just remember something I liked. I liked that girl. I mean, they also fucked it up, obviously, by the end. But that girl, I did like how she was very headstrong, how she started, and how she was determined to get answers done. And her line about, you know, I'll rather have justice, but I'll settle for vengeance, whatever the fuck.
Mm.
But she actually gets it. And she is like the leader of the villagers' fighting force.
Mm-hmm.
And even though over half of them die, so what's the point of even fighting these people if you're going to get half your town dead? Whatever, doesn't matter. Skip that. But she becomes that person, and she becomes a headstrong person. And then when the older Native American comes in, she becomes a coward again. Doesn't even like try to be like defiling in the face of danger, or tries to actually, you know, I don't know, like be that person that she's supposed to change from, or be different, or whatever. Like it's like they quickly devolve her just so you can have the other Native American save her, and you can have both. You can have her be headstrong right before she dies, and have the Native American fucking save her anyway. And I don't know why they changed her suddenly, but I still like, before that point, I like what they were doing with her.
Right. I also didn't like that they treated her like, and I get it, it's a Western movie and it's of the times, right? But they're like, when he goes get the Mexican, when Denzel Washington gets the Mexican on his side, and then they like treat her like the piece of the shit that woman, like, oh, just like stay down, ha ha ha, making fun of you, and we don't care about you.
Yeah.
And like, I get it. But at the same time, like, you know, you can work your way around stuff like that. You don't have to.
Yeah.
You know.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Good Knight, which is Ethan Hawke's character, cool name.
Mm-hmm.
Good Knight and the Mexican, they were the ones that were anti-paired, right? Because he was in, Good Knight was in the Union. Not in the Union,
his grandfather was in the Alamo.
And the animal, that's what I meant. That, so he hates Mexicans. They make a point of that.
They make a point of it.
He's racist on them and stuff. But by the end, they're very buddy-buddy. They even help each other out in some of the killing. And
exactly.
He revenges on him and stuff like that, the Mexican after he died or whatever. All that stuff happens. But there's no, like, clear thing, like, of bonding that happens. Like, they skip, like, seven steps.
Exactly.
Oh, just one step, really.
The bonding, I guess, was that scene where they all get drunk at the place.
Which was... barely anything.
Barely anything, yeah.
Felt like the Suicide Squad scene when they go to the bar for no reason.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, anyway, I just want to mention that, too. Another thing I hated that made no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to cut it?
No, I kind of want to just finish this review.
Cool, let's finish this review then. That's Magnificent Seven. We really don't recommend it, but if you want to watch a dumb movie to make fun of with your friends or with yourself, then we recommend it for that.
Yeah, you don't need to watch this in theaters.
No, definitely not. Don't spend the money. Pirate it, dude. Or nothing. Anyway, that's it for Magnificent Seven. We're going to take a quick break for a clip. When we come back, we'll review the indie sleeper hit. Not really sleeper, just indie hit. Hit Hunt for the Wilder People. So, stay with us.
Come on, give me some bars so I can communicate with the outside world.
Ricky, take a look at this.
Oh, Uncle, we're famous. Hector Faulkner, 65, and Richard Baker, 13, have been missing now for 6 weeks. Faulkner is Cork Asian. Well, they got that wrong because you're obviously white. There is a fear for Faulkner's mental health following the recent death of his wife. Police are not ruling out kidnapping. Kidnapping? Park rangers have been alerted for anyone seeing the pair should report back to the nearest police station. Oh, Uncle, you're basically a criminal now. But on the bright side, you're famous.
In order to avoid the weight of child services, Ricky and his new adoptive father, Hector, are on the run in the bush, creating national controversy. This is the latest film by Taika Waititi from New Zealand. Also, this is in New Zealand, made by New Zealand crew, New Zealand actors, all that jazz. The guy who brought us last year's really good movie, What We Do in the Shadows, which is a mockumentary about vampires. He's on other films too, like Eagle vs. Shark, which I hear is very, very good as well, but I have not seen. And you know that Mr. Waititi is going to do the next Thor movie, which is interesting. The third Thor, Ragnarok. Yeah. He's set to do that, so I'm very curious to see if, it could be paint by numbers like some of the other ones are too, like a lot of them, especially the third ones.
I don't think Marvel gives them a lot of leeway to do
that. Well, as I'm saying, I'm curious to see if he can get his personality stamped on there somehow. It'll be very interesting to see. Either way, I want to see it. And I'm more interested now.
Maybe they just won't understand them when he's giving their dailies.
Maybe they just don't understand New Zealand accents. Like, oh, he's totally normal.
Yeah. Right. He just uses all the lingo from New Zealand.
Yeah.
And they're like, yes.
Bush.
You can do that.
Yeah, the bush.
Right.
Yeah, bush means forest, by the way, for Americans who don't understand what I'm saying when I say that. Anyway, this is his latest film, like I said, Hunt for the Wilder People. Unfortunately, Roth is the one this time around that did not see this film.
Wampus. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. We're going to talk about it and see what
I will be here to ask questions.
Yes, and then, you know, just see what you think of the film based on our discussion.
Based on discussions, yeah.
So
no spoilers, guys.
Luke, real quick, you've only seen one of his films, right? What We Do in the Shadows, right? What did you think of that movie?
It was funny.
Did you like it?
Yes.
Good. Did you have high expectations going into this one? Did you know that he directed it?
Nope.
Oh, you didn't. So did you know that until right now? I mean, did you not know that?
You mentioned it before.
Okay. So without further ado, then, how did you feel about Wilder People?
This movie was fucking amazing.
Really?
I fucking loved it.
Really?
So much.
Okay. What did you love about it?
So much. Just the whole story, how it just went from, you know, this orphanage kid and then to this crazy adventure of them being in the forest and, you know.
Him being a pervert.
All that fun stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Did not expect it.
Right, yeah.
He literally just said the synopsis of the movie.
He did just
say. I'm sorry. That's what the synopsis was. Oscar just read it, and that's exactly what you just repeated. What you liked about the movie was the synopsis.
No, it's okay. I think that the driving force of the film is all the characters, for sure, and everything around it is it's just like extra nice fodder for it. Like, it makes sense how they speak and what happens to them. Like, and this movie it's a little batshit. Like, they're living in a batshit world, like slightly askew. No one's really normal in this movie. The people chasing them, the fake police, even though he has police written all over his uniform. Sam Neill, who plays Heck, which is interesting. Sam Neill is in this movie. But he must be originally from New Zealand, I think.
I think they're all in New Zealand.
No, I know they are in there. But Sam Neill, the actor from Jurassic Park, right? Dr. Grant? Have you not seen this movie?
Jurassic Park?
Park?
I'm looking it up. Sam Neill was born in Northern Ireland.
Okay, then not from there. Even more.
And his father was from New Zealand.
Oh, there's a connection. I knew there was something. Well, I figured there'd be something. Anyway, he plays the grumpy. It's funny how, you're right, everyone's character starts off somewhere and it ends not completely different, but it ends with a different light with you.
Right.
Even though they're all acting in the same way they would act. Mm. But you find out they're just much more human about it.
And of course, Rhys Darby's in this movie.
Yeah, Chris Darby's in this movie.
Rhys Darby.
Rhys Darby, whatever.
Psycho Sam.
Yeah, he plays the werewolves guy in What We Do in the Shadows. Yeah. The werewolves, not werewolves. Really funny scene. I want to see that movie again.
He's a comedian. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I know you told me about him. I don't know anything about him. I just know I've seen him around in bit parts.
Mm-hmm.
Like this movie. So The Hunt for the Wilder People, it is essentially a comedy, but it's a little more than that. It's definitely a drama as well. It's interesting how it's so Taika Waititi that I can't even like find something generic to compare it to. I can't find anything to... I can only compare it to his past other movie that I've seen of his, so that's like I even know that much about the guy. But the movie is so fun and quirky and has such a interesting energy, especially with the kid, how he starts out wanting to be a gangster, and Tupac is his best friend, and Tupac becomes the name of his dog, and how it turns him to from this kid who doesn't want to be in this like out of the woods barn family area, being adopted newly into this family, to running in the forest with the guy he would least expect with, and the guy himself doesn't want to be with this kid either, and they become essentially like the best partners in crime. And while this is happening, the controversy of the news going around that this kid might be kidnapped, or this kid might be in cahoots to run away from child services, because earlier in the film the mother dies, and it's interesting how that happens. Just fucking pops out of nowhere, A, and B, it happens right when the kid's obviously becoming a part of the family. What did you think of the turn of events that happened throughout the course of this movie, Luke?
I thought that was... At first, I wasn't sure where they're going to go with it, but that was kind of fucked up when just the mom just all of a sudden dies. And the guy flat out tells him, like, you know, you're the reason you're... She was the reason you're here.
Right, he's such a... I mean, it's very brutal and sometimes. Like, and
he's
point
too honest.
Yeah, like, very direct.
And
man.
He kind of just tells him, like, you know, hey... Here's this letter they sent. And they're kind of come pick you up.
Right.
You're going to go back to the system.
Yeah, and well, the only reason he knows that's because the kid read it to him, which is interesting how that happens. Like, here, read that letter.
I'll read it out loud.
Out loud. Yeah, he hides his illiteracy very well, actually. And so, of course, the kid makes fun of him to the point where he wants to kill him. I would have killed him, though, and choked him out. But then he, you know, breaks his... It's funny how one thing leads to them... Like they're forced to be bonding, right? Because if he didn't sprain his ankle or whatever happened to him...
They were in there for like 5 weeks because he sprained his ankle.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, they were out there for a long time. And it's funny how the time passes in a very strange way in this film. It just happens. And if it wasn't for the slight news articles or the police woman slash, she's not a police woman. The child services didn't say something, then we would never know, seemingly. Or if you look at the state of his coat, which does not fit that jungle at all, or forest. You look at the state of his coat, it just gets worse and worse, and he's just using it for like just like a bedroll. I like this hoodie that goes all the way up to his face. And the movie is funny because you can't pinpoint the comedy. The comedy is all in the way they're acting, the way they're talking, of course. But it's not like they're purposely out to make jokes. It just
comes kind of natural.
It's natural.
It seems like that would happen if they were just in a situation.
Right, that would happen if these particular characters were in these weird situations.
So is the comedy what they're saying or what they're doing? Or both?
Both.
So is it how they react?
There's this one part I have to mention.
What?
It's the Lord of the Rings reference.
Okay, go ahead.
So they're hiding underneath the thing, underneath like a tree type thing.
Yeah.
And these police guys are like searching the forest for them. And like the kid looks at Hector and he like, this is like motion of like putting something on the finger. And Hector's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And when they pass, he's like, Lord of the Rings. That was totally Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. And did you get that before he said it?
No.
No, I thought it was something like, sexually weird.
Well, like, what is he
I thought the kid was
about?
Trying to say some joke. Like, although, it clearly like, looks like a, yeah. you know, like a terrible sex joke.
When he says Lord of the Rings, I started laughing. I'm like, it totally is.
Yeah, it totally was.
And they're
was.
From New Zealand. And that's where hobbits are from.
Yeah, well, not, yes, of course. And you know that Terminator joke, too, that happens later on when he's like, I'm the Terminator. No. I'm the Terminator. I'm looking for you. You're Sarah Connor. You're the...
Oh, right.
Before she could do like bench presses or whatever. You're that Sarah Connor. And that was is very funny, but I think it goes into like how... it seems like all these people like have seen the same movies or read the same books or grew up with the same
like
shit.
A cultural thing?
Like a maybe yeah, maybe like a cultural thing, and the way everyone reacts to everything is like the child welfare lady is clearly acting like an FBI cop would be in the 90s action movies, looking for the fugitive, right? Looking for that, you know, yeah. exactly like the fugitive. She probably thinks she's Tommy Lee Jones.
It's funny because at one point the guy tells her, like, you're not a cop.
Yeah, you're not a cop. And her slogan, which isn't even part of the slogan, no child left behind,
right,
is like so cliche.
Yeah, and then she keeps like, well, she reads him the Miranda rights when they catch him. And he's like, that's not even a thing.
We don't have Miranda rights here. That's what that's an American thing.
It's so great.
I love how that cop, fake cop, whatever he was, kept pointing these things out.
Right.
Like, he was the only sane person in this entire world.
Well, I thought he was the cop, but she was just the foster thing.
Yeah, that's what it was. But, like... Right.
But she became the cop, like in the
she,
essence.
Yeah, she was on the news. Like, why is she on the news? Like, talking like about and all the newscasters are looking at her bizarre because she's saying weird things. Like, no child left behind, no child. Like three times, she says, "It's ridiculous." Anyway, I think a lot of these people, especially Ricky, what guy's last name? They say his full
it's
name
just,
like a
Ricky,
lot of times. No, they say his full name like 50,000 times in the movie. That's where I want to.
Oh, wait.
Don't they? I'm pretty sure they do. Doesn't matter.
Ricky Baker.
They keep saying that. Ricky is interesting because it's a, like much like the welfare person and maybe other characters, maybe a little bit like Hector too, because he's also human just like everybody else, even though he's like a big hermit. He has dreams for himself that are impossible. Like that welfare child's lady, whatever, will never be an FBI agent from America.
Nope.
No, she can pretend all she wants. She's not that. She will never be that. With this Ricky kid, and there's that scene when they argue, again, in the bush, of course, everything happens out there, with Heck, who, towards the end, where he just tells him, like, you're not a gangster, you know.
So I've known gangsters, and you're not one of them.
Right. I mean, well, it doesn't matter even if he does or doesn't know that, but, and you know, watching the kid, this, you know, fat 11-year-old or 12-year-old, he is not a gangster, and as much as he wants to be, as much as he can name all his dogs to back if he wants, it doesn't mean he is one, And coming to terms with that is a little bit of an emotional thing that happens in the film. It happens quickly again, much like time passing. It just happens, and it gets on with it. And I want to talk separately about the ending later. But what did you think about that? Because Heck goes through the same thing about getting, you know, because the kid knows about emotional psychology because he's probably been like studied so many times from juvie and all that stuff. He mentions a lot of psychobabble back at him about him.
Just to kind of confuse him?
Yeah. No, confusing maybe making fun of him, but also like pointing out the fact that he is still going through his wife's death.
Right.
You know,
yeah, he's coping.
He's still coping, and he doesn't want to admit it, obviously. He's a very old, stubborn, you know, codger. And I think they go back and forth on that, emotionally speaking, these two characters. And it's actually kind of poignant for me. I liked it. What was your favorite aspect of the film for you?
I like the little Ricky Baker was just hilarious. Like, he's this gangster kid, but then he's like doing all these little haikus.
Oh God!
All across.
I like how even the mother. Okay, that's enough haikus for today.
Right.
In the beginning, because she seems so supportive. Like, I love you. I'm gonna love you. It's like she's very forceful about her like intentions towards having a family. Right, no matter what.
Right.
But she also means it. She's also genuine. Like, she's not bad at it. Like, she looks like she's bad at it, but she's not. I like that. What do you think, Ruff?
Yeah, I think I really like that other character who you guys haven't mentioned yet.
There it is.
Restarby, yeah.
I like the slang that they have in the movie. It's like, I didn't choose the Skux life.
Yeah,
the Skux life chose me.
I'm yeah.
Like, what is Skux? I'm like, no, that's gangster.
Must be the thing they have there.
I'm just looking at these quotes from the movie.
What did you think of the Rhys Darby's thing in the
Psycho
in...
Sam?
Yeah, Psycho
fucking
Sam.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
because they get the so basically they're walking at one point and they see this guy that's dressed as a bush walking around like the bush is moving,
and he turns
and he's like, "I'm not here to hurt you. I know who you are. It's about time I ran into you." And takes him to this like secret compound, give him like metal calendars.
My favorite part is where like, dude, I have a hatch. We can climb on the ground. He opens it. Oh, I haven't dug it yet.
Yeah, wait, I have this thing. He's like, oh wait, I haven't done that yet. I've just been wasting my life. Like he's... let's play dead. He plays dead. No, you have to do it, or else it doesn't work.
It's funny how he's like almost over the top. He doesn't get there, but he's almost there, and he's a really good. He delivers really good fast paced comedy wit there going on. He plays crazy really good, actually. I liked it, especially the hatch. That's really funny. Oh, that was great. And then they take his car,
right? And all this crazy, just fucking red.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the ending? How he gets to the ending? How like oddly realistic for such an ending. I mean, for
that he gets adopted and
he gets adopted by another family, right? That he managed to sticks it out with.
Well, he kind of met them in the journey.
Oh, was that what it was? Maybe I missed that.
So basically, at one point, you know, when they found that guy, the park ranger, and he was sick, he went and then, like, he found the girl, and she took him so they could call it in, and he kind of fell asleep in her place after eating some sausages.
Right.
And then the girl and her father were like, oh, take a selfie with him, and he became even more popular.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they took a selfie. The father didn't even know what a selfie was. Yeah, that was really funny.
And it's funny because at that point, like, he goes back. Hector's gone because the cops are there already, so he's gonna use the skills.
And also, like, the imagery of having like the SWAT team, right, who we called ninjas, by the way, doesn't know what tactical gear looks like at all, or ninja gear, honestly. But this tactical like SWAT team is in the middle of the fucking forest. Just like, they're in the worst attire ever, and they really, it kind of feels like all of New Zealand or wherever city they're nearby, like, they're just really bored and they just want to like capture these two because it happens to be in the news. Like, it's almost like too wholesome, right? They're using all of their manpower to get this kid who possibly could be like sexually harassed.
But well, it's just funny because the way he said it, he didn't even realize
it. The way he said it. the way he comes to a realization later on, like, right. I'm like, dummy. But that was really well put, the way it was written around it. You know, that was the director was played the pastor.
Right, I saw that.
Oh, the priest
the pastor
or whatever.
Was so weird. It's like, the door leads to Jesus?
Sure, yeah, Jesus. Yeah, that was really weird. It felt like it was improvised on the spot. I'm curious if it was or not. I don't think so because, you know, some people reacted. The actors were reacting a certain way.
Kingy, you wanker. You arsehole. I hate you heaps. Please die soon in pain.
In pain. It's called King of You Wank. Yeah. What did you think of the fact that he had that the whole waiting till he after prison thing?
Yeah, that was weird. It's
I said, it's part of the like that slight touch of realism. Like, yeah, eventually they would be caught. Eventually he would be adopted again, and he would have to go to jail. Yeah. Like, all those things that would happen in real life.
Although
would,
I don't see why
happen.
They went to jail. I still have issues with that, but.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, it kind of makes sense because he is a minor, no matter how you put it, and he wasn't supposed to be out there, and you clearly weren't on your way back to the authorities. You were clearly going away from them, so I think that's enough. I would, yeah.
But it's funny because, you know, he was also trying to, you know, at that point, he was trying to learn to read and everything, so.
He didn't go forever either, though. He stuck it out. And remember how he had that scene, and this is really important because he had that scene with the kid about he had once been to jail and he doesn't want to go back again, remember? And he would never go back and all that. Probably goes back to why he's so quiet and stubbornly and all that. But the fact that he does go back because he can't wait to come out and be with the kid, you know, be his uncle. Right. And he tells him at the end, you can call me uncle. That was really good. Like, it earns every single line of dialogue, as silly as it may be in the beginning and as jokey it might be in the middle, to get to that ending. Which is why I think this movie is actually kind of something. Kind of something cool to watch and something pretty unique. And special. It was a really fun movie. But I'm really glad you dig it. I really did not know which way you're going to end up on this movie. I'm glad you
I fucking loved it so much.
Good. Yeah,
I think it's got a place in like my top 10 at least.
Yeah, cool.
I think it definitely has to be there.
Yeah, now that we had done the review, I can't wait to read some of the other reviews on what other people have said about it, because I'm curious. So, you know, because I don't want to. I usually don't read them before.
Another quote: "We're offering $10,000 to anyone who can capture them, dead or alive." Oh wait, no, alive,
no. Alive.
They should be alive.
All right, that's it for Hunt for the Wilder People. It's available to buy or rent on VOD. I don't know if any other place. I bought it on iTunes myself. All right, that's it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. You can always send feedback, don't forget, at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Check out our website at otherpodcast.com for feeds and whatnots and all that jazz relating to fucking website. I'm really bad at this stuff.
You're really bad at closing.
I'm really bad at closing. Not totally, but somewhat. You can follow me, if you wish so, for movie chatter at Armin Filmmaker on Twitter. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. As well as on Letterboxd. Stop reading quotes. Luke, where can people find you on the internet? Okay, here it comes. Go ahead.
Hector. Sam, what's the fastest way out of here? Psycho Sam. Jetpack. Do you actually have a jetpack?
That was funny. All right.
He's molestering me.
Oh, Majestical. Majestical.
Majestical.
Yeah. Ralph, watch this movie.
Faulkner is cock Asian. Well, they got that wrong, because it says you're obviously white.
Yeah. All right. You can find Luke and Blind Noir. Ralph, where can people find you?
You can find me at Gamer Ralph with Gamer and Ralph. Two R's and enough.
Yes. That's what he means. Not separated, though. But
no, know, not separated.
As if there were two
that's
different
just
words.
That's weird.
I have another podcast. Well, no, correction. I am a part of another podcast called SOS Supernatural Occurrence Studies. You can find that at sos-radio.com. SOS-radio, the name of it. It can find be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, any podcaster of your choice. It is a, obviously, supernatural themed podcast where we talk about this is bi-weekly like this show. And, yeah, it's great. I'm a part of that. I'm like the fourth group of that. I produce and edit their shit. So if you're interested in that kind of interesting, spooky,
jazz.
Yes, it's totally jazz. That's
all
what we call
jazz.
It. All yeah. that jazz. Yeah. Oh my god, some blues too.
Oscar can say that because it's from a movie, and it makes sense because it's all that jazz.
Clearly, it's all that jazz. Have you seen All That Jazz?
Sure.
No,
well, you haven't. None of you have. Anyway, check me out there. Remember, guys, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other Friday. Now, Luke, you have the next show for us, which is coming out on October 21st, by the way. Do you remember what movies you chose? Or what made it doing for you?
Nope.
One of them.
Okay, so okay. We're going to try to get Yoga Hosers again, because now it's actually available on Amazon as of today.
Okay.
To rent. We will also be going to... We're going to watch The Girl on the Train.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You sound so sure. Yes. One of the films is The Girl on the Train, which is coming out next week, right. I believe. It'll be 2 weeks.
Then we're gonna try to do Snowden, if it's still a possibility.
Right.
If not, we're also looking into The Accountant.
Right. We're going to try to do Snowden because we're catching it kind of late. Luke really wants to see it, and it's an Oliver Stone movie. I do want to see it too, by the way. It's not like I don't. But it might be too late for theaters, and if it's obviously too late for theaters, it's not available anywhere else. We have that gap in between. So if we end up missing it, we will catch instead The Accountant.
Although, if you want to send me a nice torrent, you know, nice a thumb torrent. Drive with a file in it.
Yeah.
Cool too.
Yeah, slip it under his door. I was going to say rug, but why would they do that? If not, then we'll watch the Accountant, which is a film starring Ben Affleck. And it's some sort of like thriller, weird movie about accounting
and guns
and shit. Anyway, watch the trailer for that. So, Yoga Hosers, The Girl on the Train, The Accountant / Snowden. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Remember to keep up with our podcast.
Maybe we miss all that. Maybe we'll just watch Masterminds.
No. The Accountant is fine. We can do that.
Guys, next week, couldn't watch any of the movies.
You're not going to watch?
Yep.
Why not?
Couldn't. Just so busy.
Yeah.
You're not busy.
Oh, hey, who knows? I might be in Florida next week for all I know. So
that's true.
They got movie theaters in Florida.
Yeah.
I think there's a hurricane coming through, so I don't know if
yeah. It'll be like in The Shining when the tornado was cutting up the Shining theater.
Yeah.
I don't think
this is ridiculous. We're just like drunk off
disaster.
It's 3 in the morning right now. So we're going to call it quits now. So thank you, Cinephiles, for listening. We'll see you next time. Arrivederci!
Downstairs, okay?
Yeah.
And pick up Leo, because I went to go drop off Matt today at the airport.
I heard, yeah.
Okay, so I come home. I'm hungry, okay? I have a bowl of cereal, and then I opened the fridge. I didn't notice until I put the milk away. I was like, who brought wings? And then Danny's like, I'm like, it's Wingstop. It has to be Oscar.
Danny's default reaction is, oh.
Exactly, that's true. So then I go, well, it's in the main fridge. It's fair game. And he's like, that's your choice. And I was like, yes, it is.
Motherfuck you. See, you went through the motions, and you're like, it's probably Oscars. What, you think my mom will go to Wingstop?
Right. Well, you never leave anything in the fridge unless it's fair game. And I remember because you're like, last time you left a soda in there, and you told Danny, oh, well, I left it in the fridge. That means it's for anybody, right? Okay. So I took that same logic that you left something in the fridge. That means it's for anybody.
You know, I gave him a pop back for that. I was kidding.
You're stretching.
Where's my wings, huh?
Hold on.
Throw it up. Because I bought that the night before.
All right. Come on, guys. This.
I bought the night before. I purposely bought 20 so I could have lunch for like 3 days. Motherfucker.
Okay, I ate 4 out of 8.
Well, I know Lexi joined me. That's why. No, this about this, Grubhub? Today would have been the third day. I can't hear you.
Don't you think you should ask questions? I'm going to ask questions about the movie you guys watched.
Do you want to do a podcast? Yeah, that kills you, doesn't it? Yeah, you feel a fucking sting. Now pick up the fucking mic. When I feel like I can contribute, I'll pick up the mic.
So you're not going to contribute?
It's off right now.
Yeah.
I don't want the bed noises to...
Oh, yeah, all these termites are... Well, maybe I don't know what's in here.
Bed bugs.
Bed bugs.
Termites?
Whatever. They're both small and crittery.
Gonorrhea. Crabs. Pubic lice.
Gonorrhea doesn't move around. Wait, does it? I have no idea what
you have. Super gonorrhea.
Peculiar. You can leave it open.
Yeah, leave it open.
There's no one down here, so it's fine. Usually, if the lights are on, doesn't mean there's no one down
here. I walked out there, there's nobody there.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you move your laptop at least so I can stretch?
Can you not have your laptop at all? Because it's just all it does is distract
right.
you
Be
and Ralph.
Be professional like Jay.
Dude, he brought notes.
Killer.
I mean. They were like nonsensical notes, like.
Well, he basically
just like
wrote
the character names.
He wrote out IMDb. You need to open that door the whole way.
Did you just fart?
Yeah, like 6 times.
Fucked hard. Jesus. I'll take.
If you're not gonna contribute, you might as well just leave the room then.
Yeah, but you're fucking coming back, so don't get used to it. No, you are coming back.
Also, why'd you get lemon pepper? Couldn't get like honey barbecue or something.
I want chicken. I want my chicken back. Yeah, no idea how much that
FYI.
Bummed me. That bummed
Danny
me out.
Was totally going to eat some with me. And then he's like, what is that? I was like, oh, it's probably lemon pepper. Sounds so bland. I'm not going to eat any.